Every so often, if we comb the waves carefully enough, these seas will still present an unexpected gift. Dr. Howard Rosenbaum and Dr. Martin Mendes, both researchers with the Wildlife Conservation Society and the American Museum of Natural History, recently made a new discovery, a brand new species of dolphin, to describe the find, the quest, and how this changes our understanding of sea mammals. We are joined by Drs. Rosenbaum and Mendes. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you for having us today.
Thank you, Andrew.
Dr. Rosenbaum, is this an example of something new hiding in plain sight? How different is this species of humpback dolphin?
We've known about the distribution of these dolphins for many, many years. The amazing discovery that we had was that when we conducted the most robust scientific analysis to date, involving genetic samples and morphological measurements of dolphins throughout their range from the west coast of Africa all the way to Australia, our study revealed that there weren't only two species of humpback dolphins, but in actuality, we proposed four, and one of which, the one off the coast of Australia, is new, yet as of unnamed to science.
And Dr. Mendes, why is this a new species and not just within the variation expected in any animal?
That's a great question. Basically, because the variation we observe between this population of Australia is as great as the variation observed typically in any other species of cetaceans. We can observe the same distinctiveness for this group that we observed for many, many dolphins.
And Dr. Rosenbaum, how'd you find it?
Over the last decade, we worked with our colleagues and collaborators, some of which come from our own staff at the Wildlife Conservation Society, other through collaborative scientific efforts of people based around the world to study dolphins in the wild and to collect tissue samples and examine dolphin specimens in museums. So we built the most robust data set on these dolphins, this group of dolphins known from the genus Sousa or humpback dolphins, and then analyze a number of genetic markers as well as the cranial variation that exists among these groups of dolphins. And with that in hand, we were able to conclusively propose the revision of the number of species of humpback dolphins.
And Dr. Mendes, I don't know if you've heard the story of the Olingo and the Olinguito, but there was another mammal that they have just discovered in Latin America, in South America, in which they actually had an example of it 20 years ago living in a zoo in the United States, and they could never figure out why this critter would not mate with the other olingos, this olinguito. They just thought it was small, it was a runt version. So I'm asking about this new version of the humpback dolphin. To our eyes, if I was just to go out and got lucky enough to see dolphins swimming in the ocean, would I see the difference between this species and the others?
That is a really good question, actually. You would probably not differentiate between this new proposed species of dolphins in northern Australia and some other species of this group in, for instance, along the coast of China, for instance. Because the differences we have observed really are at the genetic level and really are at the morphological level, but with subtle measurements. The things we measured had to do with the length of the rostrum or dolphin beak. We had made measurements along the head's features, and those features are really not so obvious at plain sight. So we had to take this data set and analyze them with quantitative methods to realize of these big differences. But most of these differences are not really obvious to the naked eye.
And just one thing to add to Martin's great answer there, some of the differences that exist in terms of just some overall phenotypic or outward-looking appearances weren't sufficient to justify revision of the number of species. It's the work that we did in terms of looking at these underlying genetic and morphological characters, as we call them, that actually really, in essence, provided the most robust scientific evidence for us to publish this paper and demonstrate that these are different species.
And now the question that I'm a little reluctant to ask, which is when I think of Australia, I think about the endangered coral reefs, and I think about other areas in that part of the world which are threatened, which are endangered, whether because of overfishing or acidification or things like that. So I'm wondering, have we found this dolphin only to possibly lose it in a very short amount of time?
This is actually a great point, because one of the things we can influence with this discovery is really conservation policy. So what we're hoping is that with the discovery of a new proposed species of fangnail dolphins in along Australian waters, is that we can raise the profile of these species and of the region. And sometimes these new species are used as flagships for conservation in some areas. So this discovery influences conservation in raising the profile of the area, in being able to provide an accurate status of these species, and in being able to design conservation schemes, which may go from conserving the species in itself or its habitats. We are really hoping to influence conservation, broadly speaking, in the area.
And the government of Australia has, like many other governments around the world, have great laws to protect their own marine and other biodiversity. So when this proposal is formally recognized as a distinct species, you know, we hope that the government of Australia will use the information as to its maximum extent possible to protect them, as Martine has suggested.
And Howard, though, because we're talking about marine life here, it's probably more difficult for one nation to try to conserve or to protect that species because they range beyond borders. So does this take an incredible amount of cooperation? Does it take scientists like you to track these, to try to say, hey, these are the group we shouldn't be messing with?
That's a good point, Andrew. I mean, this animal, though, for the time being that we know, the new yet as of unnamed species, you know, has a distribution in Australia. It may have some distribution in other range states in that part of the world as well, but we don't know that yet. But typically, working on marine mammals, and particularly marine species that migrate or have these broad distributions, it does take quite a bit of cooperation with governments, with various range state governments. And this is a good case of where, with some of the other species that we've now, you know, basically solidified our proposed number of species within humpback dolphins. For example, the Atlantic humpback dolphin stretches along the west coast of Africa. If we're going to protect them, we're trying to protect them in multiple different habitats that span multiple countries. And in fact, the Wildlife Conservation Society works with the governments of Congo and Gabon for one of Africa's only transboundary marine national parks that help protect these dolphins. And that's called Mayumba National Park in Gabon and Konkwati Duali National Park in Congo. And really, that park on the marine side is set up to protect, you know, animals that don't know geopolitical boundaries, if you will, like Atlantic humpback dolphins and sea turtles, for example.
So I want to go to a fairly basic science question next, which is the process of science always begins with questions, hypothesis, curiosity, exploration, and that's to some degree the very fun part of it. But once you've begun testing it, usually you run into a gauntlet of no. And I'm wondering, how hard was it in this case to convince your peers, to convince everyone else who wanted to say, nah, this isn't a new species, you're just finding an anomaly. How hard was it to convince the scientific world that this really is a different species?
Great question. As I was suggesting before, there have been quite some argument about the number of species within the Sousa genus. And that is the instance where many people really doubt the existence of different species. The reason why this proposal for new species we think is so solid is because we're combining different data sets that are quite independent. So we are combining morphology, and we're using genetics, and within the genetic data, we're using different regions of the genome, and all the evidence points to the same patterns. So finding four very divergent groups of dolphins that we propose to call species. So the fact that we find this concordant evidence really is a testament of the what a solid proposal we're trying to make. So unless you have such a broad variety of data, people have good reason to argue against this. And we are not really saying that this is the definite number of species. As you keep exploring these questions with additional data and samples from additional places, it's quite likely that you may find further speciation. You may find additional independent groups of dolphins as we keep looking. What we've found so far with the data available so far.
And if this question was going to get solved, it was going to be, you know, with this data set, with our co-authors, by assembling this collaboration of scientists, you know, the leading experts on this group of species around the world, this was how this question was going to get solved. Putting it all together, doing the analysis that we did, writing it up for peer-reviewed publication where we get the criticisms of our peers, other leading scientists, and we have to address them. Well, once you do that, you do get the stamp of approval in the scientific world. And it took a number of years to do this, and we recognized it was taking a number of years, but we wanted to get the answer and be able to say unequivocally to our peers, this is the best evidence, and this is why we can propose these number of species.
And I'm imagining that one more thing which came into play was the new expansion in technology when it comes to genetic testing, that perhaps 20 years ago, if you tried to do the same study, you might not have been able to tell that there was this degree of differentiation, but the new advances open up new worlds and new possibilities of getting more precise answers.
Yes, absolutely. And that's exactly the point we were trying to make when we said that, you know, by looking at additional data, we can find more precise answers. And as you pointed out, 20 years ago, it would have been impossible to look at this question with the level of resolution we are looking at it right now. And as we keep using new technology and new analytical methods, it's quite likely that we may find additional evidence for further, again, differentiation, not only between dolphin species, but in general, in wildlife.
And what's next? What do you hope to look at next, other than maybe to swim with these dolphins?
Well, seeing these animals in the wild is always a treat and something that we encourage, you know, we hope people will, around the world will actually take advantage and see, you know, these dolphins in the wild and appreciate them and help conserve them. I think it's, you know, one of the things that we do here at the Wildlife Conservation Society is we look to make these types of discoveries using the best science possible in order to protect animals and their important habitats. And then we use that information, obviously, in this case. You know, that's why, you know, it's so important to get this information out, to inspire as well as to leverage, you know, the conservation impact for them. And so, you know, we will continue to work on these animals in the wild. That's key for us. It's critical. I mean, these dolphins face countless threats and numbers, you know, extraordinary numbers of dolphins are killed every year due to bycatch. That's incidental net entanglement associated with fisheries. And, you know, our hope, we continue to work to ameliorate and lessen those threats for these dolphins and other animals throughout the range.